Rav Dessler arrives in England in 1928. Of course, coming from the Cheder of Kelem, which is the father of Musar, you can imagine that London at that time, certainly compared to Kelem, was a spiritual wasteland. The fact is that it was said at the time as a reality that there were more Talmid Chachomim in the small Beis Medrash in the Kelm Talmud Torah that could be found in all of England at that particular time. Talking about 1928. The fact was that in Kelm there were many Balabatim that were Poshit, that were fluent in Shas and Poiskim. And in England, even many of the spiritual leaders that were called the English Reverends, Lamaisa, did not have that kind of a command in the knowledge of learning. And especially things which were as essential as mikvahs was something that was something very, very scarce. And was kamat barely known at that particular time, talking about England 1928. Interesting enough that there was a yeshiva, the Yeshiva Etz Chaim. Yeshiva Etz Chaim, Lamaisa, did boast two Gedolei Yisrael at that time. One was the Yoel Lapian, and the other one was Rabbi Eliezer Greenspan, Big Talmud Chacham. But the yeshiva itself, basically, interesting enough, was not run by these two Gedolei Yisrael, but they were run basically by Balabatim, largely unlearned Balabatim, people who didn't really understand what Torah was all about. And it was not until actually that Moshe Schneider was a well-known Mashgiach, a well-known Elochayid and Talmud Chochem, arrived in London from Frankfurt in 1938, that it was a real advanced yeshiva with a proper Rosh Yeshiva. As a matter of fact, years later, Hagoyer Moshe Sternbuch, Shlita, was also a Talmud of the Schneider Yeshiva. Matter of fact, Moshe Sternbuch writes that in one of his Svarim, that Moshe Schneider, from time to time, something that we mentioned a while back, I had to mention again, would send out Bochrim. It was by rotation, sort of, in order to raise money for the yeshiva. Turns out that a particular Bocher, who it was his time, his in rotation, to come to go to raise money for the yeshiva. So he spent a few hours going from house to house, but turns out he was very, very unsuccessful. Whoever he tried to meet was not there. Atka de Kach was very embarrassed because not only didn't make money for the yeshiva, he didn't even make up the expenses for the taxi and for the car. So it even cost the yeshiva more than what he was able to bring in. So he didn't even go to Rosh, he didn't even go to Moshe Schneider, he didn't even say anything to him that how he fared, whether he was successful or was unsuccessful, but he didn't mention it. He says 2 weeks later, Moshe Schneider comes over to this bocher and says to him, I want to give you a big yashar koyach, a big thank you. He says, why? He shows him a check of $5,000. He says, look, there's a check of $5,000 over here. So the bocher looks at it and says, I never met this person. I never got this pledge from him. I never solicited from him. And Rosh Yeshiva says, don't you understand? Do you think the hatzloche comes from the source of the ishtadlis? You did the ishtadlis 2 weeks ago, and the bocher brought the hatzloche. That slach is very mysterious. He says the person many times thinks that the source of his bracha is exactly from the place where he's going to do the ishtadlis. You had to do your ishtadlis. You had to do what you had to do. Because your bracha brought bracha in what you did, but not exactly from here. It brought it from someplace else. So he says, I give you the ashikoyach for you because you went and you took time. And you're matzliach. You didn't see it right away. So many times actually Rabbi Rabin of Pshischa used to say, when it says in Pasha, says, you know, Yarov Kamotor Likhi, that my Torah learning should be like rain. So what does it mean, my Torah learning should be like rain? It means the following. He says, you know, a farmer, you know, when he plants the seeds and he sows the field, things are certainly not going to grow right away, not tomorrow, not the next day. Is that a lot of things that depends on certainly weather and climate. Hopefully it's going to rain. And after it rains still, it may take, you know, a good few weeks until you're going to see the payers, you're going to see the results of the planting. So says Rabbi Rabbeinu Pshischa, when the Torah is telling you the same thing comes when somebody learns Torah. Not always do you see the success immediately. Sometimes a person, he learns, and somehow doesn't feel that he was successful. But realize that you just planted the seeds, and he says, the consequences, he says, and the Teitzos, that which comes, we'll see later, Yarev Kamotar, my Torah will be like the rain. The rain, when it rains, doesn't show right away what it accomplished, what it achieved. But weeks later, you'll find out the tremendous, right, tremendous gain and benefit that the rain brought. The same thing with the learning also. Sometimes the person wants to seek success right away, immediately. The person should never underestimate, he says, the achievement, not by the moment, but rather to have to wait out a little bit, and possibly he'll see a lot of success in his learning, and so on. Interesting to point out that regarding that particular time that was in London, as we mentioned, that it was like a spiritual wasteland, you have to realize that not only that he was separated, he says, from the world of Kelm, from the world of Musar, but the truth is also, living in Kelm, basically you lived in a Jewish community, which basically the Gentile community was basically surrounded on the periphery, which means that you were involved most of the time only with actually the Jewish community. Here, all of a sudden, in London, he was thrust in a totally different atmosphere. He was thrust in one of the most populous cities in the world, in which the Jewish neighbors were the islands, but surrounded completely, of course, he says, overwhelmingly with the Gentile population. It goes on to say further, would you find out also that even people at that particular time, even those who had some connection, he says, to Jewish observance, it was mostly external. It was more on the outside. There is no real depth to it. There's no panemius. There was no inner commitment, but rather more of practice being done by rote. And he points out in an essay, Rav Dessler, regarding, he says, the real difference, he says, of two people who can serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, the contrast between, basically, there are two modes. There are two modes of life. Two modes of life goes back to the history between Cain and Hevel, right to the beginning of human history, he says. Both brought korbanos, both brought sacrifices. But you find out that Hevel brought from the choicest of the flock. What does that show? That shows that truth is his real intention was really to serve Hashem. At the same time, you find that Cain also brought something, but we know he brought from the poorest of choice. So both on the outside, both brought sacrifices. But nevertheless, when you really looked and evaluated, you would see one really was more on the outside, doing what just appeared to be serving Hashem, but there was no real inner, no deep meaning. Now, Dessler went on to point out that similarly, we find that same contrast between similarly doing something which appears okay on the outside, but it lacks a lot of true inner meaning. We find the same thing between Shem and Yofes, right? The two sons of Noah, which he points out, Shem, Yofes. Yofes really means beauty. Now, beauty really is something that we define beautiful means something that's the exterior, because you really don't really know what's in the inside. Yefes was someone who represented beauty, which means represented chitzonius, represented really the outside, and it focused really on the external form. Shame means a name of a person that defines his essence. You know the word neshama? The middle letters of the word neshama is shame, the name. The name. Shin Mem is right in the middle of the word of neshama. Because that to be the name of a person, that's the essence of a person. That's the neshama of a person. Shame is the essence of the Jewish people because they are a people of panemius. They are people really which is not merely external, but they are people really which is internal and really deeply, deeply committed. And still further, says Rav Dessler, the same two type of modes we find also between Yaakov and Esav, he says. On the one hand, we see the tremendous kibudav. Chazal tells us the Medrash that Esav had honoring Yitzchak to a point of an extraordinary degree. Yet at the same time, he was thinking in his heart, what did he say? After when Yaakov took the brachas, he was thinking in his heart that ki, right? When the Yemei Evel of Avi, when the mourning of my father, he says, will pass, will come soon, then I'll kill Yaakov, my brother. So at the same time, right here on the one hand he's honoring his father, but yet he can't wait just as far to get his father out of the way, so then he'll be able to kill his brother. And certainly Yaakov Avinu was on the other hand an ishtam. An ishtam means a person who is a pure person, who is a complete person. It's not something which is on the periphery, something which is an external person. And that was really something which, well, that's the point that that was what clearly can be seen, the level of the Yiddishkeit that actually existed in London at the time. It says even those that somehow did have a connection, he said, but nevertheless, he says, it was more of an external, and was lacking a lot of commitment and a lot of depth to it. So now he is in London. So finally he secures himself a position, becomes the rabbi of a shul called Ein Yaakov. It's the Ein Yaakov shul, and that was somewhere at the east end of London. It's a city basically where most of the Jewish immigrants who had found their way made their way over there. His salary at the time was a very meager one, even according to those times. It was something like 10 shillings, which is something like a half a pound a week. And you have to realize, not only was it a small salary, but that half a pound a week, really, it affected, you have to understand, first of all, it reflected the congregation was poor to begin with. But the idea was, the understanding of Balabatim to appreciate, you know, the greatness of Rav Dessler, they could not appreciate it. To the point that one of the Balabatim would say, okay, Rabbi, I have to wake up for Slichas, but I'd like you to come and wake me up. So this is the idea. They had no idea, you know, of who really he was. They didn't appreciate it. They just didn't know. That's a simple situation at the time. I have to mention again that on that meager salary that he had was a half a pound a week, he not only had to provide for his own minimal needs, that's all he needed, minimal needs, but he also would send back money to his wife and children who were still in Kelm, right? And he would also support an invalid father that he had way back in Europe. And also in addition, he had to save money so that his family would eventually join him. That's all from that same half a pound a week at the particular time. It's interesting thing is that you can tell because the letters that he wrote, remember we mentioned many times the tremendous correspondence that he had also with Reb Chaim Oizer at the time, who was his uncle, but also a lot of letters that he, between him and his father. And you can tell from the letters of how he expresses himself, you know, what he was going through in London at the time. He says that the rabbinate, okay, finally, he landed a job to be a rabbi of a congregation, he says, but in his mind, he says, what they expect and what it turns into is that it's no more than a business, he says. And for him, he says, to be a rav in a shul, he says, which the perception is that it's a business, he says, he does not feel that he'll ever be able to really achieve that which he would like to achieve. And he points by himself, he says, the truth is that the spiritual level of a rav, he says, is able to be raised, he says, by the community, you know, the type of community that he has. In other words, if the community, first of all, also, if their spiritual level depends on him, then he also grows. He also grows because he has to offer, he has to give, and he has to commit, and he has to do. But he says at the same time, he says, if one's public activities are tainted, he said, by considerations of money and COVID, then he felt that you lose the influence, he says, that one is able to have. So therefore, again, he was not far from satisfied, feeling that he cannot really achieve that, which of course that he lived for, that he would like to, they would like to achieve. And they used to say the following, this is what he writes in the letter. A person who attempts to arouse others, and he remains untouched himself, He says, cannot be described as a person upon whom, he says, the schus of the public depends. You have to feel that you're also growing along with the people that you're trying to influence. And Rav Dessler, at least in his Anova and his Anivis, did not feel that he's gaining enough out of that particular situation. As I want to mention is that you can just see how unhappy he was in London. What would be the ultimate? Well, the ultimate or clear evidence of the unhappiness that Rav Dessler had being there in London at the time, that he considered possibly he took a trip to America. He took a trip to America in those early days, right, in the summer of 1930, in search of hoping to find a more satisfying position. He'll go all the way to America. So it's an interesting thing, the trip he planned of a long time. His father, Rabduvin Dave, tried to dissuade him, said, no, he says, you don't go to America. He said, America is certainly not going to find anything. If anything, it's going to be worse for you at that particular time. On the other hand, in Elul 1929, Reb Chaim Oizer advises him that he should consider to look for a position in America. Very interesting. And there's a sefer called Achiezer, Collected Writings of Reb Chaim Oizer. And you'll see there one of the letters, he writes to Rav Dessler, he says, yeah, maybe, he says, you're so unhappy here in London. Maybe go to America, maybe you'll find something which is a little bit more satisfying. So, in his short stay, didn't stay very long, by the way, you have to realize, he remains in America no more than 2 months, and he saw it's not for him. He remains in America 2 months, and basically he departs by an ocean liner, right, he goes from England, it was on June 25th, and he's already back by September 4th. That's it. He already saw that it's not for him. Where did he stay when he was in America? Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Herman. Rabbi Yosef Herman. All for the boss, yeah? All for the boss, right? Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Herman, right? Who is a person who grew up in America, like born in America, real American, who had tremendous yad d'ishmaya. He had a very, very warm neshama. He was a self-made person, became a tremendous tzaddik, and the hesped that when he was nifter later, when he left and he was oil at Eretz Yisrael, there, Sholem Shvadron was masper him, he called him the small Chofetz Chaim, Rabbi Yankiv Yosef Herman, a person who dedicated his life, right, to for Achnosas Orchim, dedicated his life, he dedicated life for Achnosas Orchim and for Chizaka Torah. Wherever he was able to support Torah, he was the one responsible by sending Avigdor Miller to Mir. He was very much responsible to sending Reb Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg to the Mir. By the way, he became a son-in-law. We know Reb Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg was a son-in-law. And quite a few others. That was Reb Yankiv Yosef Herman. So Rav Dessler stays in America. I said for that short while there was America, he stayed for Reb Yankiv Yosef Herman. And he writes a letter to his father. And he says as follows. I'm staying by this person, he said, Rabbi Yankiv Yosef Herman. He's a businessman, brought up in America. But he's an outstanding Yirah Shemayim. This is Rav Dessler writing. He's an outstanding Yirah Shemayim who observes the mitzvahs of the Torah, he says, meticulously. He influences also many other people and guides them to become observant Jews. Rabbi Yankiv Yosef is known for strict adherence to the mitzvah of Achnosas Orchim. On a Shabbos, there are approximately 20 guests at his table. And he says, we enjoyed each other's company immensely over Shabbos. He's not a rich man in money, but he is wealthy in Maisim Tovim and good deeds. That's what he writes. Yeah, this is what the Askoma of Rav Dessler on Rabbi Yankiv Yosef Herman. Just want to mention to you, which is written, by the way, it's mentioned there in that book there. It says that the year following Rav Dessler's trip to America, the year later, he was able to repay Rabbi Yankiv Yosef's hospitality. He was able to repay him. What happened? A very phenomenal thing happened. It turns out that Rabbi Yankiv Yosef unexpectedly turns up one night in England at the door of Rav Dessler. Late in the middle of the night. What's the purpose? With a request whether Rav Dessler would be able to gather a minion that he'd be able to daven Ma'ariv. It's something like 2 o'clock in the morning. And despite the lateness of the hour, Rav Dessler succeeded in doing so. He got a minion together for him. Rav Yankiv Yosef, you have to understand what happened here. Rav Yankiv Yosef took a plane to London from his preceding destination. Why did he take a plane? He really didn't take a plane those days. He took a plane because he realized that if he would proceed by train and boat across the English Channel, he would not possibly arrive in time to get a minion. But if he'll take a plane, maybe he'll be able to make it. Maybe he can make it on time to get a minion. Turns out, by the way, plane charge at that time was a tremendous, tremendous amount of money to buy a ticket for the sake of a minion. That's why he's buying a plane ticket. So it turns out that the substantial added price of an air ticket cost him nothing. Why? Because he arrived in England without a proper visa. The customs officials only allowed him, right, to come in because he came by plane with such an unusual situation. To come by plane, which was a novelty. Had he arrived, he said, by sea, he would have to pay a large fine, right? Which would be equal to the added amount that he had to pay on the plane. So you see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu siyata dishmaya, midi keneged midi. If it was Moshe Nefesh for minyan, he didn't even lose by the added price that he had to do. Either way, had he come by boat, he would have to pay the same amount of money. One way or another. All right, this is a little bit again more about Rav Dessler. So again, so he was able to repay the hospitality. You see, this is very significant, isn't it? Because Rav Dessler, we had all of the essays talking about being a giver, not a taker. Rav Dessler certainly didn't want to be a taker. But sometimes you have to take. But the point, you can be a taker, yet still can be, you're taking, you're still a giver. Because you're taking for the purpose to be able one day either to repay it, and also to be able to acknowledge certainly the Hakara Satoif, to have the feeling of gratitude. That's called paying back what you're taking. So let's take a look over here now, page 43. Page 43, if you find it. This is Perichet, this is called B'she'ifa HaToivot. This is called good ambition. Good ambition. Okay, B'she'ifa HaToivot. Because it's called good ambition. He started to say, Namik noket sas hapam. He said, let us try, he said, to reflect a little bit deeper. He says, Haravoin, when somebody is starving or craving, that's an oisle chasorin. When somebody craves for something, that means he's lacking for something. He's lacking. Certainly from a physical standpoint, when somebody's hungry, it means because the body is lacking, the body needs food. Ki hamachzor b'mozin, for example, if someone is lacking food, hanidrish l'guf adam, which is necessary for the body of a person, that's what makes him hungry. The lack of food that the body needs is what makes him hungry. Rav Dessler said that's also true in every ambition that a person has. When a person is craving for something because he believes he needs it. Now we can understand when you're talking about food, that's a physical, that's a biological need. A person is hungry because the body needs food, and therefore the need of the food expresses itself in hunger. But Rav Dessler says the truth is any time that you have a craving for something is because you feel that you are lacking. The same way that the body is hungry when it's lacking food, but that's a reality, that's true. But a person, his own mind, when he's craving for anything material, is because he is lacking it. He feels he needs it. That's true, he says, in all of ambitions. Hashoyev, the person who has a desire, who has an ambition, who has a craving, because chosar is hashayishavelov, because he's lacking that, right, which is pursuing. Why are you pursuing it? Why are you craving for it? Why are you starving for it? Because you feel that you need it. You feel that you're lacking it. If you feel that you're lacking it, so now you are pursuing it. Zoysemeres, that means the hashayifa, the craving of a person, right? The craving of a person, the ambition, that's the koyach hamoshech, that which draws him, that's what drives him. It drives him to be able to fulfill that which he thinks he's lacking. Yimshoch el ha'odom, it draws the person, right, dvarim, the things, sheyemalu es chesroinoi. So that's the psychology of the thinking of a person. A person, right, a person who is driven, a person that craves is because he feels that he's lacking. And somehow he believes that by getting that which he craves for, will satisfy and fulfill that which he feels lacking. It'll be memalis chesaron. It'll fulfill that which is he feels is missing. V'chein asoiveya, a person who is satisfied, is because watching is smala chesaron, because the lacking, right, has been fulfilled. Ukomer, as we have said, hasheifois, the desire of a person, he says, the craving of a person, the ambition of a person, is toildos koyach hanatila. It's all part of being a taker. I take. That I have a craving for this. I need that. In his mind, he believes that he needs this. Ein lam sodeya. They cannot be satisfied. A person who has within himself a nature of being a taker, he'll always be a taker. And even after he receives, he wants to take more, he says. He'll never be satisfied. Because again, why is he taking? Because he feels he's lacking. A person who always feels he's lacking, that way he's taking, he's always going to feel he's lacking. And even if you try to fulfill that which you thought is lacking, he has a chesaron again. He's lacking again. He needs more. And think that he needs more again, so he's driven over again. The eichu koyach hanasina, on the other hand, but where's the source of the power of giving come from? The power of giving comes from when a person's fulfilled. That's why he's able to give. That's the opposite of taker. That's the opposite of the machshava of one who's a taker. Einenu koyach hamoshech. The power of being a giver is not something that's is drawn from the outside, but that's part of his inner self. Ki yovi mishleimus, it comes from fulfillment, not from chesaron. V'nivaya, let me explain, he says. Ish kozeh, when you have a person, he says, asher dovar chumri, where material things, enenu shove be'enov lehis anenboy. A person where material things really, that's not what makes him happy, that's not what interests him. When you have a person that material things don't interest him, and he's happy with what he has, whatever he had, he'll be satisfied. To have that kind of an attitude, to be content with what you have, that's a bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not only to be content. You know, it goes further than that. Rav Dessler goes further. It's a big madrega to be content with what you have. A high madrega is to be happy. See, some people content, okay, it's okay. A high madrega is not just to be content. I am happy with what I have. Why? Because I recognize that whatever I have is a gift from Hashem. If you looked at whatever you have as a gift, then you are really happy with what you have. Let's take a look as he explains that and expresses it. He says, Zuhi birches hakeil baruch hu. This is a matana from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that a person should feel fulfilled. He shouldn't feel I'm always lacking, I'm always needing. Because it says, V'chalto v'savato v'erachto. V'chalto v'savato, you will eat, right? And your bench is not only food. V'chalto means Hashem will give you, He will benefit you. And you will feel satisfied. U'verachto. And you'll be able to give a bracha to Hashem. To thank Hashem. Matona toivi hiliyodom Hashem izborach. This is a, says, a matona toivi, a wonderful gift. Sheyucha li yisholim. The gift is that a person can feel fulfilled. V'lo yichosar. That's the purpose. Man was created to really to be fulfilled what is here in the material world. From Chazal, it is not foreign to us. What does Chazal say to us? Masechet Avos. Ezu Asher, how do we define a rich man? You're right. People, if you ask people in society, they'll have 25 different definitions. What do I consider to be? When am I rich? What are you supposed to have? The answer is being rich is not with what you have. Which means that just to be happy with your lot, to be happy with your lot. I'll only be happy if I have this much. I'll only be happy if I have that much. The Osher is Hasamer Bechelkoi, and he goes out to point out. He says Chazal understood that. Chazal understood the deepness that's rooted behind a person's feeling, right? What truly is considered the person that is rich? Chazal, he says, Ba'adir Chochmosam, with a tremendous wisdom. Chazal, our Chachomim, with a tremendous wisdom. They tested people, they saw people. They saw people can have a world of fortune, and they're unhappy people. And yet you saw other people have much, much less, and they're happy people. Just observing people. Bochanu bebnei yodom. They have tested people. They have observed people. Ve'ro and Chazal saw with their great chokhmah, they saw. Kamishtalim b'shleimus hanefesh. A person basically who is interested in more in a spiritual type of a life. That's called shleimus hanefesh. A person who tries to grow spiritually. Yizba. He says he's going to be satisfied for a year out. And he's not going to feel hungry. Yismach b'chelkoi. He'll be happy with his lot. Happy, not just content, as he says later. Happy. He'll not have a desire to have more material needs. That person who is zoche, a person who is privileged to reach that madrega, that is the true osher. But unfortunately, most of the masses of people, they're always lacking. Always asking, I'm always lacking. He's missing this, he's lacking this. They're always poor. When he says poor, means got millions of dollars, they're still poor. Because they're always lacking. There's also something else that he needs. I need more. I need this. I only have this, that. So they are niyim, they are poor, and they're raving. And they are starving. They are hungry. Koyach hanasina. Now, from where a person to have a nature of giving, where does it come from? He said, to have a nature of giving is eina shoira ela ala sameach. Leirak mistapik, you see? To want to be a giver, it's not merely enough that a person is content. But to want to give, you have to be happy. Why? Give a simple example. When you make a simcha, right, when you're happy, you want to share it with others. When you make a simcha, if a person is someach b'chelko, you want to share that too. So the someach b'chelko, when somebody is b'simcha, what he has, you want to share your simcha. When a person can have that attitude, so the koyach hanasina of a person, the power of the person to be a giver, is when he is besimcha in what he has, and therefore truly if he feels blessed with what he has, he will also want to share with others that which he has. Koyach hanasina, again, the koyach, the power of giving, says einenu shoira ela al someach. It's only on one who is really happy. Loirak mistapik, not just he's content. Bechelkoi, who v'raku, him and only him. He's kinohar asher meimav yirbiun. Such a person who is happy with what he has, he's like an overflow, like a river that overflows its banks. It's ready to get to share. When a river overflows its banks, so therefore it benefits, it contributes. Halal Esav, take a look, he says, don't you see? Kasameach kol asher tigdol simchosa, the greater the simcha, I invite more people to my simcha. I like to share. Yirchav levodoy, right? His heart expands. V'yivakish esoyhavov lihonos imoy b'simchas liboy. So the koyach of giving is when a person really is really happy. He's sameach bechelkoi. He's a sameach with what he has. Therefore, go to the next page, 44. Next page. Kochohu hanoisein, this is the way of the giver, asher beruchnius yisoidoi. But that has to be a person who basically focuses more on the spiritual aspects of life. A person who focuses on that, therefore, he does not define his happiness on how much material he has. That means the person really has to work on his ruchnis, that kind of a person, whose foundation in purpose and life is his spiritual life. Anything that he does, his eyes are raised to the Kodesh Baruch Hu. That person who understands that whatever he has comes from Hashem, who yira, he says, behold, over godel vegam kotnes chazdei Hashem, he says, kloy somnu. A person will not take for granted any little thing. Some people say, I only thank Hashem for the big things, not for the little things. He says, don't realize that, he says, that everything that you have to understand, is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because the truth is, Hashem's gifts are endless. The truth is, we stop to think, the fact that a person is able to breathe, right, is able to breathe 25 times a minute. Every breath that you take is a tremendous matana. We said it many times, Chavishom, just go into an intensive care ward. You see people are there, we have to be on a life support machine, where every breath, right, every breath really is something that is one can understand how much it takes out of him, and when the people just can't breathe naturally, and so on and so forth. I'll call neshima, neshima to halakol, but it's every aspect. You know, the moshel always goes, we appreciate it, you know, when chaz v'shalom you lose it. Somebody loses eyesight in an eye. And then he finds out that there is some famous doctor out there who will be able to restore his eyesight, he says, for $100,000. He'll do whatever is possible to be able. So all of a sudden, so now if Hashem did not blind you, you have your eyesight, you have your $100,000 right there. You have $100,000 right. So does Hashem Chavishom have to blind the person that he should see that his eyesight is worth $100,000? Or to be able to move a finger? Or to be able to move an arm? To be able to... Every chelik of your life! Every chelik of it! The story goes, you know, that someone came to Rav Shach and invited him. He said he had a mazel tov. So Hashem gave him a gift. His wife gave birth to a daughter. It was like something like so he's making a big kiddush. Didn't have children for 10 years. Didn't have children like for 10 years. So Rav Shach used to say. So this person makes it. Then somebody else comes in. Also says a mazel tov. So also says a mazel tov. I'm making a kiddush, a small kiddush. So if Shach said to him, I want to ask you a question. The fact you're making, you're saying you're making a small kiddush. If you would not have had children for 10 years and you would have gotten a daughter, you would have made a big kiddush. So Hashem spared you the pain of giving you a daughter right now. That's why you thank Hashem less. So Hashem gave you the daughter right now. So the opposite. You have to thank Hashem even more. You didn't have to wait the 10 years. But we don't understand, because we take it that this is something natural. We don't see that the Ashkoches Hashem, we don't see the Yeshuas Hashem in that aspect. And that's what Rav Dessler points out. A person has to recognize every Dover Godel of every Dover Kof Nichaz de Hashem. Hashem in case, every second, every moment. When a person recognizes that, then you're going to be happy with every gift that you have. And he's going to have a happy life all the time. Now, if a person really has that attitude, then you are a giver. Then you'll be ready to give. You'll be a giver, not a taker. From this type of happiness, from this type of understanding, appreciating your good fortune, that's where the power of giving and love comes from. A person feels he's lacking will not have a desire, he says, to contribute to society. If he always feels he's always lacking, he says, only when a person really feels that he's connected really to Hashem. And that is the madregas at tzaddikim. This is the level, and this is the attitude of tzaddikim, he says, who serve Hashem, takem yahavo, serve Hashem really. Now I want you to go a little bit further. Look, skip to two or three paragraphs. Look, Ochein. Go a little bit further. Go Ochein. Just before the next parak. And here you'll see something very interesting. You see, again, a deep understanding in human behavior, which is something that you have to look a little bit deeper, and Rav Dessler really discerns it and puts it into our... it's a phenomenal thing that this is really going down, plummeting to the depth, right, of human understanding, human behavior. We have a situation, Rav Dessler says, and by the way, it's not a bad thing, but it's not the ultimate, it's not utopia, and that is the following. He says, Hamerachim v'hanoise be'oilim chaveroi. But you know, one of the most important attributes is that a person, right, should feel the pain of others and try, if possible, to help others. To help others who are in pain. That's called somebody who's a merachim, somebody who has mercy on others. Somebody who feels and tries to help someone unleash his burden. It's a tremendous thing. But Rav Dessler says, but it can come from two different sources. The attitude of wanting to help others. Now, to help others, that itself is a good thing. But yet, he says, there are two levels. When a person wants to help someone, one is a higher level and one is, let's put it, a lower level. Ashehema, of course, being a noisa ba'oil, it's almost all the Musa's forum talk about it. Which part? It's an important thing that a person should not only think about himself. We've heard it 100 times. We heard it's a very important thing. A person should be a noisa ba'oil m'chaveiro. If you hear that somebody's in pain, somebody's in trouble, right? Be part of it. Give him a shoulder. You know what it means, noisa ba'oil m'chaveiro. It said during the World War, First World War, Chofetz Chaim would not sleep on a pillow. Would not sleep on a pillow. He said, how can I sleep on a pillow? Be comfortable, he says, if people out there, people are dying, people are hurting, people are in pain, people have lost loved ones, and so on. So how can I? That was another way of being a noisa ba'oil m'chaveiro. Sometimes you can help someone positively, and someone at least in your heart, in your attitude, in your mind. You can't be comfortable if somebody else is out there in pain. You can't. Says Rav Dessler as follows. You find, avol behen yitztaru besoras chaveiro. In other words, there is the attitude, again, where someone is ready to carry somebody else's load. Why? Because it bothers him, the pain of his friend. So think about that. Let me say those words again. Think again. I'm helping my friend who is in pain because it bothers me to see him in pain, which means I'm helping him to relieve my pain. It hurts me to see you in such pain. You ever heard that expression? So on the surface, it's very good. It's very nice. Keep doing it. Better than you should be doing. But he said, but that's not the ultimate goal. Then the person sees it, says, okay, I can't see a person in such pain. Yeah. So it's a madrega, at least, because some people don't even have that. But the point is, but really what you're doing is trying to relieve your own pain. Because you have to feel better about yourself, because you yourself, right, have tsar when somebody else has tsar. It's also madrege. But the point is, he says, avol behen yitztaru b'tzoras chavereim, they may have tsar, right? They have tsar because their chaverim have tsar. Ukeilu yechzol yatzmon. So what's lacking for the other person is really they are lacking. The giver himself is lacking because he has a chesar in seeing the tsar of the other. Va'tovosu mimo acherim, he says, and by giving to others, it calms down his own pain. It comes on his own pain. So he says, isn't that also something you're giving to fulfill a chesaron that you have, in a certain sense? And that's another thing that he goes on to talk about. Different levels of giving. Giving because why? Because giving because I have tsar when I see somebody else's bitsar. So you're not giving so much because you are a giver, but rather because you somehow have to release the tension, you have to neutralize the tension that you have within yourself. So this is something which is, it works also, we said many, many times. Also, when you talk about the art of, you talk about love, right? Loving a person. A person that has feelings to his children. Loving a spouse. Somebody said, why are you showing affection to your son or to your spouse? So he says, because I love my son. I said, maybe not. Maybe because you derive pleasure from doing so. So in other words, so you may be doing something which the recipient may gain from, but you're doing it for a different reason. A person that right, eats food, in the vernacular says, I love the steak. You don't love the steak. You love the pleasure that the steak is giving you. What's the raya? You're taking a knife and a fork, you're sticking it into the steak. Right? That's what Rabbi Yola Pian's Moshel used to be. He says, the waiter comes and says, I love this fish. The waiter puts down, he says, it's a nice, beautiful fish. He says, I love this fish. And then the waiter says, really? Then he takes the knife, he sticks it right. He says, you don't do that. You love the fish means you love yourself. And you love the fish meaning is the pleasure that the fish is giving you. So the same thing can also work. The tsar, I have tsar, and therefore I'm giving in order to fulfill my own tsar. So this can work in many different ways. This is an attitude to look at. But I want to look at just a few minutes more. Just I want you to skip, go over here. Let's see where we're going to go here. Okay, we just a few lines here in the next empiric test. But the point is, when we talk about the different levels of giving, why someone is a giver, yeah, the point is that Rav Dessler says, first give for any reason, he says. And we have the rule, he says, Mitoch Shaloi Lishma, Vebo Lishma. So a person, if he gives, he says, maybe not even for the right reasons, but give. It becomes, the truth is, the Ramchal says many times, the Chitzoinius eventually will be Mashpi on the Pneumius. You keep doing something, says the outward motion, eventually becomes part of you, becomes like, yeah. So Avdessa says it right over here, if you see Perites, see a few more lines here. Ech Iskarav Hodem Elkoi Chanesine. What brings a person to become a true giver? So we want to be a true giver. Before a person can really reach, right? Can really reach the optimum, right, of a human being, harehu chosar. For not as he is missing. Eloi hashifa, and he doesn't have the admirable reason for giving. Habo mitoch hachovas hadas, as we explain. Balkan, he says, when you are progressing, when a person is growing, so a person to do good, you might have to use, he says, the craving, type of a goal. Sheifa shel milach esroinoi, hanoivas mikoyach hamoishcha v'havas atzmoi. Do good, even if you're doing it to satisfy yourself, which is not the ultimate reason for doing good. But first, do good. Eventually, you do good for the lower reason, because you want to satisfy yourself. Maybe sometimes it might even be for honor. Maybe it's honor, whatever the reason is. But eventually, a person who wants to grow will ultimately become a giver for the right reason. Lemoshlo. When we're talking about between a person and a Kodesh Baruch Hu, Yaseh Shloi Lishma, even do it if it's not for the sake of heaven. Even if it's not L'Shem Shemayim. Kloim L'Tzarech Atzmoi. Right? A person, let's say, is observant yid. It could be either Yasa Meira, maybe he's doing the mitzvahs, not L'Shem Shemayim, out of fear. What is he afraid of? He's afraid maybe he'll be punished in the next world. Right? That's an ulterior motive. Or V'yasa Manasta Kabbal Pras, or maybe he's doing the mitzvahs because he wants to get reward in the next world. Again, whatever he's doing is because of his own benefit. Fine, start out that way. And also Ben Odom Lamoker, Ben Odom Lachaveiroi. The same thing, doing good, just like Ben Odom Lamokam, you know, between Hashem and a person, we say, do it even Shloi Lishma, Metoch Shloi Lishma, between Odom Lachaveri also, even do it for ulterior motive. Do good even for ulterior motive, because eventually, hopefully, for the ulterior motive, it'll turn into Elishem Shemayim. You'll do it for the right reason. As he points out, Techem Odom Lachaveri, Yasekreilu. Also, even do it Shloi Lishma. Shloi Lishma means Metoch Rachmim, Metoch Midas Rachmim, Vanoise Boilam Chaveri, not the Midas Atov, not because you have a Midah of goodness in you. But Kisibis Maseyu he asher yidche saratzmoy. He's doing good because he wants to remove his own pain. I can't see the tzar of somebody else. So basically you really mean yourself deeply. Fine. Do it for that reason, as he says. Go to the next page, and that's one more four lines. The Ine Kol Eile says, so all of this giving, if you're giving for ulterior motives, you're really a taker. Because I'm giving, why? Because of the benefit that I'm gaining. So you can be a giver, but you're not really a giver. The giving is rooted in taking. See, if you're giving, right? That's just the mechanics of it. The mechanics is of your giving, but the interpretation is you're taking. However, but it's okay. You do it even Shloi Lishma, even when it comes to Ruchnius. As it says, Kmo Shenemar, V'ahavta Seshem Elokecho, B'chol Levavcha, plural. What's B'chol Levavcha? B'chol Levavcha, with all your hearts. Doesn't say b'chol lipcho, b'chol levavcho. So what did Rashi say? Chazal say b'shnei yitzarecho. No, b'shnei yitzarecho means use even the yetzer hara to do mitzvahs. Yetzer hara says do it for a different reason. I don't care what the reason is. Use the yetzer hara also to do mitzvahs, which means leimor shishtamish hodom ho'oile. A person wants to progressively grow. Use the midas yetzer hara leman tzorche aliyosoi. That's the idea. So the idea ultimately is, of course, a person should try to do good, whatever the reason is. Do good. And Bez Hashem, if a person wants to grow, that right motive that started out not to be on a lofty level, Bez Hashem will be Zerech Tzati Dishmaya, then he'll do it for the real reasons and the proper reasons. Okay, I'd count for this. Let's take a Rabbi size, look at the sheet that we have. And we hear here We hear this from the Sefer Leif Sholem. It's a Sefer that he put together from the various cassettes of Sholem Shadron from Droshes. They put together. So this is in Parshas Chayesora. This is in Parshas Chayesora. And there, Rav Sholem wants to define who is the ultimate. We had Rav Detzel saying, Eizu Osher Asameir Bechelkoi. The true Osher is not of how much one has, but it's really someone who is happy. Right? He's happy with what he has. Who is the ultimate person that you could point to who is a Samer Bechelkoi? So Rav Des, so here, when we learn from Rav Destor, but here Rav Sholem Shadron points out, I'll show you an example of the ultimate Samer Bechelkoi. And he goes as follows. He says, if we are looking for an example of some of Samer Bechelkoi, you'll see how he touches it up. Just evaluating, look at the life of Sori Meinu, and you'll find out the ultimate madrega, the highest madrega in being someone who's happy with his lot. The Pasuk says, we're very familiar, it says, 100 years, Esrim Shona, 20 years, Besheva Shonami. You know the word Shona repeated three times. So Rashi should have said 127 years. Meyo Shona, Esrim Shona, Sheva Shonim. So Rashi says, Meyo Shona, Esrim Shona, Loma Pirat HaKosiv. Why is the word Shona mentioned? Why is it broken down? 100 years, 20 years, to compare the two different time frames. To tell us, Baskuf ke Baschof Lechait. At the age of 100, she was pure from sin like at the age of 20. Okay? 100 years, 20 years. To compare, at the age of 100, she was just as pure from sin at the age of 20. And Baschof ke Bazayin Leyoifi. At the age of 20, she had the beauty of a Bazayin, of somebody who was like at the young age of 7. And then it says, again, Shnei Chayesora. These are the years of Sora. And what do Chazal say in Rashi says? Malamit Shekulan Shoven Letoiva. What does this mean, Kulan Shoven Letoiva? All her, right? All the years of her life were Letoiva, were good. Now what does that mean? What does Kulan Shol Nataiva? What does that mean? So go down to number two. Benir Lefarish. He wants to touch what Rashi means, Kulan, all her life, Kulan Shovin Lataiva. What does that mean? Benir Lefarish. Dine Sora Menu Akora Hoysa. It's a very interesting observation. And the question that is how we look at this. It's come out everything that we know, but we never really looked to understand what's happening here. He says, Sora Menu, as we know, was an Akora. We know that, right? She was sterile. She was unable of bearing children. Ubederech HaTeva, according to nature, Hoysa Shilula Kol Efsherut Lehoilit Bonim, right? She did not have any possibility. According to Chazal, she was even lacking a womb. According to Chazal. So Ubederech HaTeva, there's no way in a natural way that she would be able to have children. Especially once she reached the age of 90, which is already advanced age, the koshkin is certainly be higiolish nois atzadik b'chayo. Certainly when she reaches the age of 90, she has gamma ziknet. And that's in addition to being sterile, now age is also already a factor. So in addition to the physical from before, now that she's 90, that's another reason. That's an added reason, right? It's a siba limenias bonin, to prevent one from having children. Vimkain, so if Sora Menu, right? Sora Menu was sterile. Up to the age of 9, she didn't know what's going to happen. She sees she has no children. What should be the feeling of a woman, right? Of a woman who has a craving, which is a natural instinct of a woman, right? Who wants to have children. Well, L'choyre tzricho is a Sora lahargish, k'moshom l'chazal. Chazal say, Mishen l'ibonim choshev k'meis. Chazal says, one would expect that Sora Menu, how should she feel? She has no children. We would expect her to feel Mishain Lubonim Khoshu Kemes, Tachayo Hoyotrichim, Leo Shivurim, Uritsutsin. Her life should have been a life which is broken. I wish I have children. I wish you could have children. I wish you could have children. It's not, they're not. But we expect her to have a life that's a broken, it's a broken, broken spirit. Broken spirit, broken spirit. Now all of a sudden this happens, okay? Now all of a sudden this happens. Achine Nofel Dover. Vishina Hashem is a teva min akotze la kotze. Now Hashem changes nature from one end to the other. Vizochso leben. And not only stamazoi, not only she's zoichet to a son like Yitzchak Avinu. Right? Uben ki Yitzchak Avinu. And Memela now, not only she becomes a mother, she becomes now a mother. She becomes now a mother of a nation of eternity. She becomes a mother that builds eternity. She becomes the mother of Am Yisrael.
Le'em ha'uma nitzacha. She becomes now a mother that builds, right, an eternal nation. Va'simcha gedoyla. You can imagine now the great simcha. She has a child. She becomes a mother. She becomes not only a mother, she becomes a mother of a nation. Of an eternal nation. So all of a sudden there's a tremendous, tremendous simcha. All of a sudden her life changed from a life of good and happiness. Now, if we were to ask to divide up the first half of her life and the second half, how would we view the two halves of her life? How would we view? We would divide Chayeo Shel Sar L'Shnei Chalokim. We would divide the life of Sar into two Chalokim. At Tishim Shana, we would say until the age of 90, right? Where there was no prospect of having children, she didn't have children, we would say this was a life of Shvurim, right? It's a life, it was a broken life. Umetishim Shana, right? And from 90 on, oh, now she has a life of Simcha. Chaim Samechim. Comes the Torah, says, you're making a mistake. You don't know Sar Amenu. Come to Torah Shenecha Yisora Melamed Lalamdeinu Musar Haskel Shekulam Shovim Latoive Per Shekola Shonim Hoyu Latoive. Sarah Imenu accepted whatever her matzah was. In other words, the simcha of after 90 having Yitzchak, it was no different than up to 90 before she had it. Let's go further. Ubetayr Shalema, the Sefer Torah Shalema, that's from Rav Mendel Kasher. Maybe Chazal. Look at the Lashon of Chazal. There's another Lashon, a different girsa. Melamed shekulam shavim l'sosin l'simcha. The first half of her life without children was just as much as sosin l'simcha as after 90. Tremendous. V'loy omru. It's more than that. In other words, according to this new girsa, it doesn't merely say that it was good before also. It was b'simcha before also. In other words, v'loy omru shegam koidim shenisab rohoi l'toiv. It doesn't merely say that she had good before she conceived. It says more than that. Rakulam shavim kloimer. B'shavyon muchlet loy hevdel klal ben koidim leidas Yitzchak l'achreo. That's a tremendous madrega. We would expect up until 90 she had a broken life. She was a broken spirit. Look, kol mishen loy bonim ischoshev kemes. After 90, her life was a life of happiness. Kam chazal and say, soramenu kulon shavim l'toiva. Nastam l'toiva. The life of sosim v'simcha was equal before she had Yitzchak and after. And he explains it. Why? Why is that so? What's the where does that tremendous attitude come from? How are you able to acquire such a lofty ideal? Why was she able to accomplish this? The definition of good by tzaddikim is that what Hashem wants. That's what it all depends on. What's good mean? Good is what Hashem wants. To be a tzaddik, to go that. If Hashem didn't want me to have children, then that's good. Good is not what I want. Good is what Hashem wants. It's a madrega. But that's what tzaddikim. That's what it is. Because good ain't toivel tzaddikim el ritzoin koina bilvad. V'loi zul hazeh. Nothing else. V'imhoisa akor adeno. And if she was sterile till now, hari shekach bro Hashem. This way Hashem created her. V'kach ritzoinoi. What's missing? She has what Hashem gave her, what Hashem wants her to have. How is there Ritzoyna Yisborach? On the other side, when she finally conceives and she gives birth to Yitzchak, the happiness does not come from the natural, physical, biological need that I'm happy. Because these holy mothers, they were not into any selfish, personal motivation. So now, if I have a child, Hashem wants me to have that. I'm happy I've had it. I'm happy with what Hashem gave me now a child also. Because that's what Hashem wants now. So now Hashem wants me to have a child. It's also good. It's again good. It's not better. It's just as good. Because now Hashem wants me to have a child. It's on the same level as before. Why? Because both parts of her life, right, have the same reason. Good is what Hashem wants. And if Hashem wanted in the first half of my life that this should be my fate, then that must be good. That's good. Not good. Also, sosem v'simcha. And after Hashem decides I should have a child, I'm again v'simcha. But not for a different reason. For the same reason I was besimcha the first time. I was besimcha the first time because that's what Hashem wanted then. And now I'm besimcha, this is what Hashem wants now. That's the tzaddikim. That's what it means is. So it points out, look at the last line. V'areza noiro v'nifla. Kama hoyo ho'imoyes lemalo lemalo. How high they were. Just want to point out. Rav Shalom says, don't think. He says, don't think that Sarah Main was there for when she didn't have children, that she didn't daven. In other words, a person shouldn't say, okay, Hashem wants me to be this way, so I'm not going to do anything about it. No, no, no. Hashem also puts you in a situation, because Hashem maybe wants you to daven. Hashem puts you in a situation, but after all you tried and you did, and this is the way it is, this is the Rosh Hashem. I did my ishtadlis, I did what I have to do, this is the Rosh Hashem. This is the Madrege. But Sarah Main was calling Shalom, and that's the Oishah that's Sumeich Bechelkoi. Okay, this is what Hashem wants. So this is the toy for me. And that's the MSD guitar. Okay, right. Yes.